Chapter 16. Caris sipped her coffee quietly in the crossroads. The stimulant was a poor choice for her anxiety. She was seated in the clerestory, facing the big, gorgeous stained glass windows that had once been the pride of the Tyrian embassy. She wondered how the owner of the crossroads had been able to purchase this building and what it had cost. In the years since the fall of Tyria, it had become the city's most fashionable coffee house, restaurant, brewery, smokehouse, and downstairs, out of sight of those with tender sensibilities, the foremost brothel in the city. For that matter, she wondered who the owner was. Kind of thing that a spy mistress should be able to learn, isn't it? She wasn't kept waiting long. She supposed that was one of the prerequisites of her new position. She was the White's right hand, and no one would keep the White waiting. The man who sat across from her was an Elysian banker, the scion of one of the great merchant banking families, the Onestos. 25 years old and probably just now being treated as an adult, brought home from learning his trade in one of the satrapies and now entrusted with meeting the prism's bride. Or widow. At 25 he could be treated as barely an adult because he still had another 50 years left in his mortal span. How different the lives of Muns. Kurgal Onesto was dressed in his Sunday best, and smelled of some fine perfume Caris would have been able to place if she'd been a lady instead of a warrior these blighted 16 years. He sat, gulping. It had been a long time since he'd been asked to report. The White had recruited him as a boy. For her part, Caris didn't feel much better. She hadn't worn a dress since that bastard King Haradul had captured her and forced her to. She'd wanted to wear her blackguard clothes, but those had been seized and forbidden her. Caris still wasn't sure whether they'd been taken on Commander Ironfist's orders or the White's. Neither would say, which told her that whichever had done it with the approval of the other. So here she was, sending a very public message by the garb she had chosen to wear. Because her husband was the Prism, she would wear garb drawn from each of the satrapies, to show she didn't favour any over the others. Today, that meant wearing a loose-fitting white silk abaya, subtly embroidered with murex purple thread. But she wore the jilbab down. Modesty was not prized on the Jaspers, as it was in the Parian inland and highlands. Along with the traditional white of mourning, for Parians believed that death was a procession into light and not into darkness, Caris had chosen some few hints of bright colour, not pure funerary white. She wore a bright scarf, white and blue and red and purple and green, though she had bleached her hair white. "My husband is lost, and for this I grieve," her clothing said, "but he is not dead." The richness of it said that she expected to be taken seriously, that she was taking her place as a woman of means and influence. She even had a blackguard bodyguard. That it was her SWAT friend Samite made that marginally better, but the woman treated her duties seriously, standing beside the table watching everyone and everything, treating Caris as if she were just another ward who would doubtless be blind, deaf, and dumb to danger. "It's to free you to pay attention fully to the task at hand," the White had told her. Caris crossed her legs as the banker sat. It was a thob, not a dress, she told herself. Still, it made her feel naked and vulnerable. Worse, she hadn't even been able to pick it out for herself. Maricia had helped her last night, asking the parameters she wished to fulfill. Caris did, though she didn't tell the slave her task. The slave had accepted her silence on that and simply told Caris she could go to bed. It would be taken care of. When Caris woke, this awaited. The fit was perfect. "How?" she asked Maricia, as the slave woman had tied the laces.
"The tailor still had your measurements."
Caris looked at her.
"I haven't been to a tailor's shop in years. And I noticed you'd lost some weight since then, so I suggested a few alterations,"
Maricia said, her voice level. The eye for detail and the memory, the sheer bloody competence, was infuriating. So Gavin hadn't kept the woman purely for warming his bed. Perhaps she wasn't good at that, at least. Perhaps he'd merely... "What delusions are you filling your head with, Caris? She's beautiful, she's competent, she's been Gavin's room slave for years." Caris had told herself she wasn't going to be jealous of what Gavin had done during the time she'd no claim on him. It wasn't fair. It wasn't right. And it wasn't going away. She should be happy that he'd only slept with his room slave, and not every woman who would have been happy to have him. But seeing that Maricia was eminently competent roused something ugly in Caris.
She should appreciate the woman. For Holland's sake, was she looking at a slave as a rival? Ridiculous! She could put the woman out at a moment's notice. But that wasn't fair either, was it? Mauricio was trying to serve well and unobtrusively. She was even hiding how well she served, so as to remain beneath Caris's notice, probably in case Caris was as petty as she was. I would ruin a woman's livelihood, and steal her purpose from her for what, exactly? For serving Gavin well? Serving him well all night long, no doubt. And what of it? That is her life, her duty. Would I be happier with her if she had served her master poorly in petty rebellion, as other slaves do? Has Gavin said a word about Param, or Nelos, whom you took to your bed mostly to spite him? She'd made Param make love to her in total darkness, so she could imagine he was Dazen. But at least both of them were gone. And what, like I didn't know about Mauricio? He's gone, Caris. He's gone. The wave of grief came out of nowhere. Caris's throat tightened, her eyes filled. She let out a breath like a hiss, looked away, got control of herself. Torgal blinked and repeated, "Are we to have a privacy shield?" "Yes, yes, of course," Caris gestured to the beautiful woman who served as a greeter. Torgal's eyes were all over her, not very discreet for a banker. For a moment, Caris felt old and overlooked. Torgal looked at the greeter like that and not at... She silently cursed herself. She dressed modestly, specifically, so she would seem respectable. And now, back on keel, Caris. She gestured for the greeter to draft them a privacy shield. Caris handed the woman her payment. "May I bring you more coffee, my lady? And my lord, would you like something?" Caris acquiesced to more coffee, and the banker ordered ale. The greeter disappeared into the kitchens and reappeared almost immediately. She put down Torgal's ale and Caris's copy and saucer, drafted the invisible superviolet bubble that would block their conversation from others, and drafted the fans that allowed some airflow. She gave a big, perfect smile at the young banker, bowed low enough to both of them to display cleavage, and went back to her station. Probably works nights downstairs. And since when did I get so prudish? Like my blackguard brothers were pure as heaven's rain? After Torgal Onesto had a bit of his ale, Caris said, "I need to assume control of my husband's accounts." "As you doubtless know, the Onestos never comment on the status or existence of accounts. Which accounts did you have in mind?" He smiled unconvincingly. "What do you mean, which accounts?" "All of them," Caris said. She'd known this wasn't going to be easy. The proximate cause for this meeting was, of course, to take control of Gavin's accounts. What else would one meet with a banker for? That Torgal Onesto was also one of the White's spies merely made this meeting potentially doubly productive. "I'm afraid that we don't keep accounts by name, only by number. It keeps hostile nobles and kings and parents and others from seizing accounts that have been opened privately," Torgal said. He smiled pleasantly. Fop he might be, but this was a conversation he had clearly had before. More, it was a lie. Caris was certain of it. There was no way the Onestos wouldn't keep track of the account holders' names. "What happens when account holders die?" Caris asked. "Nothing. The Onestos don't even have knowledge of when that happens. We have no way of knowing that. As I said, we don't link names to accounts." "What happens to the money?" "It remains in the account, of course." "Uh-huh. For how long?" "If an account has had no activity for a generation, defined by old tradition as 40 years' time, the monies therein are made available for other loans." Which was doubly a lie, and a subtle pair of lies at that. The money was never put aside in the first place. The moment money was deposited, it was loaned elsewhere. And when he said, "made available," he meant that it then moved into his family's personal coffers. It wasn't completely unfair, Caris supposed. If an entire family was extinguished, as had doubtless happened many times in the various wars that had racked the 7 satrapies since the Onestos had entered the business, and if no heirs stepped forward, what else should they do with the money? Give it away? It was a perquisite of taking the risks of bad loans. Of course, if they were less than diligent in their pursuit of finding heirs, it would also be a quick way to pad their own accounts. Too much of that, though, would hurt their reputation. A bank was only as good as its reputation. so the appearance of punctilious virtue had to be of the utmost import. Of course, generations of the Ernestos, now long dead, had built that reputation to such a height, it was quite possible Turgal and his compeers felt they could coast on it to enrich themselves. And if they thought that, they probably thought right. Their children and grandchildren would pay for it, of course, but Caris wouldn't be there to feel vindicated. "Before you came here," Caris said, "you looked up all of my husband's accounts to see what I would be talking to you about. Did you bring them?" He blinked. "I can't comment on the existence or status," which is a yes, "and you brought them. You wrote them down." It would, the White had guessed, be quite a few different numbers, and Turgal Ernesto didn't have his ancestor's head for numbers. The White said writing down the account numbers would be a direct violation of family policy. They believed in memorizing everything. What was in your head couldn't be stolen, at least not without your knowledge of the theft. Caris was surprised that the White would know so much about a mere merchant family, but the White believed in knowing as much as possible about those who had any kind of power. In 100 years, she said, the Ernestos would probably be more respected and more titled than most of the remaining 87.5 out of 100 noble houses in the 7 satrapies. It had been a joke, and Caris hadn't caught the punchline. 12.5% was the typical rate of interest the Ernestos charged. 12.5 out of 100 left. Ah, then she got it. Here she'd been wondering if there really were exactly 100 noble families in the satrapies. Even the jokes told Caris how much she had to learn. He reached for the slender scroll case he kept slung across his back. But in addition to being given a network of eyes and ears, the White had also been directing Caris to some fingers as well, some of which were very light. Turgal Ernesto reached in the scroll case and found nothing. He upended it. Nothing. Empty. His face lost all colour, then went green. "Tell me you at least wrote it in code. Your family must have 12 ciphers.
"Of course. Of course, setback, not a disaster. It's right."
He reached into the satchel he'd brought. Groped. Blanched once more. "You brought the key to the cipher along with a message?" Caris rubbed her forehead. "You're not making some very poor jest, are you?" Torgal's wide eyes told the tale. "Your grandfather is going to be so very displeased."
"Most people don't even know it's a cipher," Torgal said. "It's just a piece of wood, a cone. If you don't have exactly the same..."
He trailed off.
You did it."
"Torgal, listen to me." The veins on his neck were standing out. "A temper, huh? Well, let him try something. Please." She'd see just how much freedom of movement she had in this thobe, after all. And for however embarrassing a man might find it to have his bung packed by an archer, how much more embarrassing would it be to be humiliated by a woman in a thobe? But then again, the blackguard clothes were an armour that kept Caris out of fights. Bullies didn't want to fight and lose. New garb, new rules. She realized then that his lack of cooperation in the first place might have something to do with her choice of Parian garb. The Ernestos were originally Elysian, and there had long been strife between them and Paria, especially among the rich who felt unfairly taxed when they used Parian overland routes for trade during the winters. Many nobles who were raised on Big Jasper prided themselves on putting those petty struggles in the past, but Turgal hadn't been raised here. He looked like another young, rich, urban fop. But he had the biases of his elders. Caris suddenly wondered if Mauricia had dressed her like this on purpose. But Caris hadn't said anything about meeting with an Elysian, had she? Had she let something slip? And this was Mauricia sabotaging her? Or had she not said anything and Mauricia would have helped her avoid it if she had?
"Turgal, I could have played this 12 different ways. I could have delayed our meeting and showed up in front of your father with all the correct numbers. I could now expose you and destroy you. Instead, this."
Caris fished the cone out of her bag along with paper. She handed both back and pulled out a third paper with a cipher correctly translated and put on flat paper. All done in the time that he'd taken to walk to this meeting.
"I don't wish to destroy you," Caris said, "but I will have your respect."
The spine went straight out of him.
"You have it. Please, I'm on my last leg with my grandfather. He'll disown me. If he does that, I can't be any use to you, right? Right?"
"I have no intention of destroying you, Turgal. I want you to take all these monies and transfer them to a new account, just in case someone else also has these numbers. This will happen today.
I can do that, he said.
High Lux Lord Andros Guile might come after this money.
My grandfather always deals with him personally, but if the monies are in a new account, even Andros Guile won't get them out.
Smart of the grandfather, then. Torgal wouldn't last 2 minutes with the old man.
Good, Karis said. Now, as a gesture of goodwill, your old rivals, the Ardini family, have been planning to move their main Arbornean warehouses from the Darks to Eastland. They need more storage, and the harbour there is better. They found exactly the area they need and have been quietly buying up the deeds. There are a few holdouts whom they've begun harassing. If your family wishes, you can buy these properties simply by telling the owners the sun shines on the obedient. The White expects that you will still allow each of them a fair profit because they will sell to you. You, in turn, can sell those properties at a huge profit to the Ardini, or if you so desire, deny the sale in order to hurt them. Tell your grandfather that he must protect the families who sell to him from Ardini retribution, and that he ought to send his fastest ship, whatever he decides. This matter is 3 weeks old already.
Torgal's eyes lit up.
If this is true, this will make me look indispensable to my grandfather. This is
very gracious of us. You're in business with us, Torgal Onesto, and you will find us good partners. It is in our interest that you rise, but only so long as we help each other.
Yes, he said, that makes complete sense.
Please understand me, Torgal. Some interpret kindness like this as a lack of will. If there is one thing that we at the Chromeria have in abundance, it is will. If you cross us... But that need never happen. We won't ask of you more than you can bear to give. Do you understand?
He did. She saw in his eyes that he had gone from scared to saved, to vassal, in the space of minutes. Caris only wished that she had been able to do any of this on her own. Instead, every pressure point and bribe had been the White's suggestion. But then, that is how masters teach apprentices, isn't it? Caris gestured to the greeter that they were done and would like the privacy shield to be withdrawn. The woman came over immediately. Caris said her goodbyes to Torgal Onesto and passed a hefty tip to the greeter. The greeter discreetly palmed Caris a bundle of rice paper documents. Her reports. The entire conversation with Torgal Onesto, as well as it had all turned out for Caris, was a sidelight for the White. It was the development of a future possible source, and a way to secure Caris's independence. He had actually held out on one of the largest accounts, which he either didn't know about or actually had memorized. It didn't matter. Leave him this victory, the White had said. It would be leverage they could use later if they needed to bring him to heel. The real source here was the beautiful greeter and superviolet drafter, Mashid Roshan, who saw everyone and knew everyone and heard everything, either directly or through the other servers and slaves here. She was one of the White's best spies, and Caris needed her. Caris got up, careful not to gaze too closely at the woman who should be just another servant to her, and went on her way. At the door she dismissed Samite, who pursed her lips, but went. At least the next part of her day would use some of her old blackguard training. She had to make sure that between meetings she wasn't followed. It was almost a relief to her when she was.